Small world, big data.
I think IT needs to remember one basic concept. The business doesn't exist because of IT. IT exists because there's a business need.
Hi, Mike Matchett with Small World Big Data, and we're here for another episode of the Tech Top 6 with Warren Avery, the chief editor and chief curator of the IT Weekly newsletter. Welcome, Warren.
Mike, always a pleasure to talk to you. I really look forward to these weekly discussions where we can talk about some of the items that come across my desk that I find just extremely interesting. So I hope you and your family are staying safe and nice and cool up in the Boston area. We're down in Phoenix, and there's a promise of rain here coming to town. So, you know, we only get about 6 to 8 inches a year total. It's about right time for our about 3 inches total. So,
all right. We were talking about locations, Warren. My question of the week last week, let's start with that, was about one of the articles we had of people working from home and then maybe moving, you know, once you freed up from a desk or wherever, you could move somewhere and still work remotely, right? And then some people were having to give up pay to do so. And then a lot of people were actually willing to do that because their cost of living would change significantly. So one of the questions we wanted to ask the audience was, would you be willing to give up your desk permanently and have people move? Are you considering it? You know, where, why, how? I've got a little bit of feedback on that. And people were saying that they wanted to move to places where the cost of living was lower. One of the considerations, though, ties in there is, are people going to be expected, once this crisis is over, to return to the office? What do you think about that?
I mean, personally, I was a road warrior for many, many years, and I always had a desk and an office. And when you think about it, I would come into the office very rarely, and I would just see just a blank desk. It had a phone and some paper and pencils, and use that. I didn't need to have a place that I called my own desk. But I know there are a lot of people that like that interaction between their cohorts and be able to look them across the table and have a cup of coffee, talk about business. I think collaboration has a lot going for it. So I understand that.
Yeah, we've done some surveys this summer here at Small World Big Data about working from home and VDI and a couple end user computing things, that have some questions about what it's going to look like in 2021. Are people going to return to work? And we get some indication that, yes, there will be a little bit of a bounce back. But in general, if 80% of the workers were in offices last year and 20% working from home, next year, it's going to be flipped. 80% of the people will be working remotely and only about 20% perhaps return to the office. Or if you like to think of it a little bit differently, instead of spending 1 day a week working remotely at home, you'll be spending 1 day a week working back in the office.
I think corporations are seeing a big change in their direction of where people are going. And I don't think people are going to have offices in the future. I think it'll be greatly reduced, maybe 50-50, 60-40. But this idea of working from an office, I think, is going away.
If you still have some comments on that, let us know. You know, I heard from a couple people that said they would be certainly willing to move and actually already in the process of trying to figure out how to move and take advantage of the low mortgage rates right now to get out of Dodge and move to a lower cost of living area and taking a pay cut. Not a problem. Other people are like, you know, my boss may never know where I'm located again, whether I'm here or there. So I'm now a permanently mobile worker. So that's a lot of people proud of that. In terms of working after the COVID crisis is over, I think that brings us right to our first article, actually, Warren, which is something about management's perspective on handling projects once the crisis is over and how you're going to maybe get everything done that hasn't been getting done, right?
Correct. There's a great article out of CIO Magazine, and it's called 7 Tips for Leading Multiple IT Projects at Once. And a lot of people think that human beings can multitask. That's a fallacy. We are serially threaded people. We do one thing at a time. And so this article has some simple guidelines for managing multiple products. And it says, if you're managing multiple products, be a leader, not a manager. The difference, leaders coach their team, their managers get involved in all the minutiae. Don't be a manager. And the more complex the project, the more leadership is required. And they said, also see the big picture. Don't get distracted by individual goals, and also keep the corporate goals in sight all times. And they said, also always designate a project manager, especially when multiple high-level projects are being presented at the same time. You've got to have someone responsible for it. The other thing they said is trust your team. Do not try and make every decision by micromanaging. And they also said, try not to have the same person on multiple projects. The other big thing is we've talked about RPA a lot, and they said, use automation wherever possible. Understand the use of RPA, how it improves accuracy and reduces time. and avoid duplication. Look for ways that you can carry solutions from one product to another one and don't have a lot of duplicate going on. And they said the other thing is stay on target, stick to the project plan and don't get distracted. So with any project you have to keep the project in mind along with the corporate goal.
All right. That was 7 tips for leading multiple IT projects at once out of CIO Magazine. And part of the advice there being to avoid duplication and staying on target is kind of amusing. Just reminds me of Star Wars, right?
Yep.
Stay on target. It's easy to get distracted when you have multiple things on your plate, no doubt. Keyword for this, multiple projects. If you want to find this article with some advice and guidelines for doing multiple things at once. If you type in project management, however, you're going to find over 130 technical articles on your website on the IT Weekly newsletter, which is pretty fun.
Yep.
One of the things, Warren, that comes to mind when we talk about getting back and down to work is security, right? This is just something that we talk about every week. We've talked a lot lately about breaches. We talked about cyber insurance. We've talked about the different kinds and types of worms and viruses and so on. One of the interesting facets of that whole conversation, though, is how foolish companies look when they actually have suffered a breach. Why don't companies sound smarter when they've been attacked, since every company is being attacked?
Yep, Mike, that is a great, great question. And it's a great article I found out of Continuity Central. It's called Reducing Your Reputation Risk with an Effective External Communication Policy. And it's by a gentleman out of South Africa called Dion Benneman. He's a management consultant. And I basically think there are two reasons. First is that we all think a breach is not going to happen to us. And second, and even if they thought about a breach by beefing up security, they've never thought about what to say. And so Dion has come up with a list of things that you have to do in terms of developing a policy and putting it in place. And he says, first of all, you have to make sure that you're complying with all the laws and regulations. Be committed to non-selective fair disclosure. Don't only disclose just the good things. Decide whether it would be a voluntary disclosure or any non-material information. Make sure you know what you're going to be talking about. Here's the big thing. Have an authorized media relations representative designated. Don't wait until it happens to finally find somebody. And then control all the disclosure to the financial committee. And then ensure that all media releases are reviewed and approved before releases. So once you've got your basic things in place, then you need to develop a policy that includes some of the following: media relations tips and rules, social media usage, especially Twitter, TikTok, etc. Who's the spokesperson? How do they conduct themselves? Rules and tips, cybersecurity rules, stakeholder relations, communications, financial and industry analyst relations. Are you going to do live or virtual conferences and seminars? Internal newsletters and intranet usage. Who does that and who's allowed to use it? Who controls the blogs, the vlogs, RSS feeds? So you got to have all of this in place and keep reviewing it. But I think the bottom line is that it's like Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan till you get punched in the face. And the bottom line is don't wait until you have a breach until you decide what to say. Plan now for something, because the question isn't if it's going to happen. It's only a matter of when.
I mean, we've pretty much seen that everywhere, that the probabilities of not being hacked are extremely small. So the probability of being hacked is very high, whether it's successful or not, or whether they get deep into your company or not, is a matter of, you know, how soon you discover them and can head them off. But everyone is going to be hackable. Everyone gets hacked. This website gets hacked all the time as people try to log into everything that I do externally, just putting it up there on the web. In response, we have, what do we have, Warren? Zero trust, cyber insurance. Make sure you run your DR plan, simulate your DR, your recovery. And now this article is actually adding to that in terms of, hey, designate your media person and let them start figuring out what it is they should be talking about when it happens. Right?
Not only what they should be talking about, but who they should be talking to. And I think the SEC gets riff. If you're a public company, the SEC is going to be very, very particular if you're not disclosing all of the relevant information.
Right. And it definitely looks better for your company if you can right away come up with intelligent things to say to the world rather than, hey, you know, we circled the wagons, we've got no comment for 2 months while we figure out what happened.
Yep.
For that article, by the way, which seems like a very interesting article for most people listening to this podcast, look up comm policy, COMM policy for this one. If you're interested in the broader things we just mentioned about disaster recovery and protecting yourself, look up disaster recovery to start with, and you'll get over 120 articles also on those topics, or what zero trust, cyber insurance, and all those other things we mentioned. I'll get you a whole raft of relevant and interesting things to occupy your time going into the end of the year. Now, let's also talk today about this next article, which is taking us to the security at the edge. We talk a lot about security at the data center. We talk a lot about security in the cloud. We sometimes touch on security of devices, but talk to me now about the security risks with Internet of Things devices. Where's that going?
Boy, Mike, you've hit a burr in my saddle, and I'm going to go on a rant. Okay? The explosion of these IoT devices is just beginning, and there's no end in sight as to what is going to be connected. We're seeing doorbells, security cameras, refrigerators, stoves, you name it, and someone is probably working and connecting that to the internet. And the retailers are absolutely salivating at the mouth on getting all of this data. And you couple that with artificial intelligence, machine learning, you and your family are truly at risk. I personally, we don't have any of these IoT devices. I don't have a Ring doorbell. I mean, I minimize my IoT devices at all. But when I talk to my friends about the risk of IoT, I get this blank stare and they say, like, I don't know what I'm talking about. And I'm saying, people, wake up. There's a huge tsunami coming, combining convenience and security. The more convenient it is, the security goes down. I worry about the Bluetooth connection in my car. I mean, if I can see it, somebody else can see it. This article talks about how the software flaws in TCP/IP stacks could result in remote code execution, denial of service, or a complete takeover device. Imagine any device in your home being taken over and transmitting your personal data, your private conversations, or videos going out over the airwaves. You don't know who's going to see it. This is not about just one vendor. Forescout has found over 150 vendors that have this problem with their devices. And Mike, I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. They've got to get something and understand these IoT devices are a huge security risk for individuals. So just be careful. And Christmas is coming. Don't just go hog wild and buy all these IoT devices for your house, because I think it's just a big warning coming there. So it's a danger point.
There's actually a couple problems with IoT devices that people should be aware of. One is the service can go out on them very easily, as has happened recently. So if you've become dependent on your Nest thermometer or your Roomba vacuum cleaner and Amazon has an outage, your house may get cold or not cleaned, I guess is what happened. Although that's maybe not the biggest disaster in the world. The interesting part about that is we have hacked ourselves here quite badly with the car Bluetooth, as you mentioned already.
Really?
Yeah, you hook your phone up to it, right? And then you're sitting in the house. Someone else goes out and starts the car in the driveway. Your phone rings. It transfers to the car. And suddenly you're talking on the phone and they're listening to your phone call. And then they're going like, what am I listening to? And then realizing they're now part of the conversation when who knows who I'm talking to, right? And so at least it's within the family here, but Bluetooth is not that secure. And if you connect to lots of different devices just to play music every now and then, beware that you're opening yourself up for that kind of immediate hack as well.
And I've not seen anything on the horizon where the federal government is going to come in with some IoT standards in terms of protection. But I think companies are just putting these things out willy-nilly. And, you know, people buy these things and they don't even change the default password. You know, the first thing you've got to do is when you get one of these IoT devices, change the password.
Right, right. TCP Risk will get you this article. If you're looking for information about this one in particular, if you type in IoT, you're going to get over 500 articles on IoT, a lot of them about security, a lot of them about the opportunity, a lot of them about what's going on in that space. So IoT is a fascinating emerging space still. Now, we're still on the security thread. Let's look at our next article here. We mentioned earlier things that you would do like zero trust and cyber insurance. And you've actually got an article here about cyber insurance. What's going on in the cyber insurance space? Because this is a rapidly evolving thing for IT people to look at.
Yep. It's an article out of Data Breach Today. It's called "As Ransomware Booms, Are Cyber Insurers Getting Cold Feet?" And the answer is yes, they are. It's bad news. Ransomware payments are going up. In quarter three of 2020, the average payment was $233,000. And insurers are looking at the bottom line, and ransomware attacks are increasing. And today, there are about 75 companies offering some form of cyber insurance, and some of them are even charging a premium for ransomware or extortion. And so for 2021, insurers really expect the number of claims associated with ransomware payments to go up. And I think in the long term, insurers will be better suited at helping companies stay secure as long as ransom payments are going to be going up. And I think what you're going to see is that these insurance companies are going to get more intrusive on your operations and making sure that you've done everything right in terms of protecting your company. And just having the fact, well, I have insurance, I don't protect it. No, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's just like if you have car insurance and you're driving 200 miles an hour or 150 or whatever it is, I think the insurance company would have a hard time paying that bill. So just be aware that insurance companies are watching these ransomware payments and what you're doing to protect your company. They're going to be involved in it. If you have an insurance policy, they're going to be watching and they're going to be watching what you do internally.
Which is fascinating because we know that once insurance sort of becomes expected or mandatory, you know, that the shareholders are saying, hey, you're not doing due diligence unless you've got some cyber insurance on your cybersecurity plan. The insurers can turn around and probably will turn around and say, hey, we want audited DR and BC plans from you. We want third-party auditing. We want you to be running your DR plans. We want to have you follow some security guidelines on protection from ransomware up front. And by the way, the government also is saying, maybe you're not going to get protection. Maybe we'll even come after you criminally liable if you pay some of that extortion because it might be funding terrorism.
Yep.
So between those two, that rock and a hard place, ransomware is really going to be a sticking point for a lot of security people next year. I don't know. It's an interesting, fascinating field. Ransomware boom gets you this article. Ransomware itself, if you type that in, will get you 350 some articles on different topics all around ransomware, all around the topic, which is
Mike, you made an interesting statement. I think just like when a public company has to be audited by an outside firm, I wouldn't be surprised if insurance companies go to a company and say, we want you to be audited by some company, whoever it happens to be. What I'm seeing, you know, Ernst & Young and those guys, they're getting very, very big into disaster recovery and business continuity. So that may be something they're looking at in terms of an auditing process.
I'm sure it's going to become big business just to protect from ransomware and DR coming up. It's no longer just your problem. It's all your shareholders' problems and stakeholder problem as well. And so you're definitely going to be pushed to do it. Speaking of that, more businesses are actually becoming more vulnerable to things like ransomware because they're becoming more digitally based, right?
Yep.
What's our favorite phrase? Digital transformation, right?
Yep.
Digital transformation. Digital transformation coming up in 2021 is still going to be one of the hotter topics and initiatives that we're going to hear from everyone. But as you digitally transform, you got to have better disaster recovery and ransomware. However, this next article you have is on digital transformation, but talks more about how to be successful with it, I think, right?
Yep,
This is some more advice on how to do digital transformation properly going into next year.
Yep. I think digital transformation is one of those catch-all terms where everybody falls into it. And there's a great article out of Enterprisers Project. It's called Digital Transformation Teams in 2021, 9 Key Roles. And we've talked a lot about digital transformation. This time we're going to talk about what your team should look like. And here are the key roles you should have on your team. You should have an enterprise data architect or a CDO, chief data officer. And this position aligns IT assets with corporate goals. Then you've got to have a database administrator. And this is a person that's going to monitor and administer data going in and out of the clouds. We normally think of a database administrator as an Oracle or SQL or someplace like this. But this person is going to become very important when you're working with a cloud. Then you've got to have a business process expert. This person is going to start to incorporate artificial intelligence, machine learning, robotics, distributed ledger into this whole process. He's going to be watching over it. And you have to have a chief digital officer. And this is going to be a person who actually interfaces at the CXO level. So you've got to have a high-level person there. You've got to have a cloud architect. Moving to the cloud is no longer an option. And this person will cut across IT silos, networking, compute, storage, and he's going to help build the hybrid infrastructure. And then you've got to have an RPA person, somebody that understands and works with a business process expert to make sure they're doing the right processes and that those are being automated. Then you want to have a solution delivery architect, and they connect the business needs to the actual technology, the architecture, the strategy. And then you've got the CISO, the chief information security officer, and they shape the overall security posture. They all start to need a broader application experience as security moves to the container, the edge, public cloud. And then you've got to ask some person that is a user experience expert, and they monitor the customer and the employee touch points to identify gaps and opportunities. So the bottom line here, Mike, is that digital transformation is not a one-man show. You need a team. And I do think that the one person that is missing is a CXO. You've got to have somebody at a senior level, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but there's going to be bumps along the way. Unless you have somebody supporting and encouraging the move in the boardroom, there may be an issue at some point. So you've got to have a very senior person that's watching over and making sure you're going in the right direction.
Yeah, my guess is that was intended by the chief digital officer on your list, which is kind of a new title that we're not thinking about too much. When I hear CDO, I think something else, right? Chief data officer or some other role. But chief digital officer, chief digital transformation officer, I don't know if they get four letters in there.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to come up to be though. So, but you know, it's interesting. They didn't talk about who was going to be that CXO in there, but you need somebody at that line. We can pretty much assume that the CDO is going to be pushing digital transformation, but I think there's going to be somebody else that's got to make sure the CDO has the authority to make this happen.
Even probably to the boardroom, I think maybe is what you need, is go back and find someone who actually sits on the board who understands about digital transformation and sponsors it even that high up in the food chain.
Yep.
DT roles. If you look up DT roles, you'll find this article. If you look up digital transformation just directly, you'll get 89, 90 articles on the topic. It's becoming one of the growing topics on the IT Weekly newsletter site. This brings us, Warren, to the last article of the week, which is about best practices. So I'm kind of excited. Only I think you flipped the switch on me here. This is not about actually the best practices, but perhaps the IT worst practices, right? What's going on in this article about the recommendations it's making?
This is a great article out of CIO again, and it's called 13 Best Practices That IT Should Avoid at All Costs. And I love this article because all of the items that we're going to talk about, I've heard over my 40 years. And IT seems to think that the world revolves around the data center. And I think IT needs to remember one basic concept. The business doesn't exist because of IT. IT exists because there's a business need. And so you hear on the floors all the time that IT isn't doing their business. And so here are about half of the items that are mentioned in terms of guarantee failure within and without in IT. Tell everybody they're your customers. They're not your customers. These are your colleagues and equals. They're teammates, okay? So don't call them customers. It said establish SLAs and treat them like contracts. Having signed SLAs mean you get to argue when an end user complains and says, well, I met my SLA, that's not a problem. No, that don't have SLAs, okay? Also, tell dumb user stories. We've always heard about somebody that takes a power strip and plugs it into itself. Don't do that, okay? All it does is make you feel that you're above them and you never make mistakes. They said also a big thing, do not institute chargebacks. It destroys any chance of cooperation when everybody's trying to decide who's going to pay for IT. Insist on a return on investment or ROI. Not every project has a return. When you make shipping more efficient, do that, increasing sales. There are areas within a company that you don't have ROI. So don't insist on an ROI for it, okay? And then another one, charter IT projects. This is a ripe area for discontents. And when IT says, we fill the requirements and the end user is not happy. No, if the end user is not happy, it doesn't matter what your charter IT project has done, you've not been successful. Also, they said assign a project sponsor. And they said they see so many companies that have what they call SINOs. These are sponsors in name only. Sponsors are not project managers. These are real sponsors that will literally put their neck on the line to make sure this project is successful. And there are another six areas where IT can actually alienate their end users. People in IT have to remember that you're all on the same team, and cooperation and trust is the key for success. I mean, I remember when I played football, I was a defensive end. My job was to take three steps in and wait for anything coming around that looked suspicious. I couldn't do any of the other jobs with my teammates. I had to believe that they were going to do their jobs to make a successful team. So make sure you work with your colleagues and not your customers.
this is a pretty fascinating list of things, because I actually could see all the arguments why these should be best practices, and I've heard them over the years, to see the sort of the counterpoint to say, like, don't make IT into a service provider, don't establish SLAs, don't do chargeback, don't look for ROI. This is fascinating advice. And I think everyone who has been on one side of the fence ought to take a look at this, open their mind and read this with critical questions in their head about what they've been doing.
You know, it's interesting, Mike, all the years I was selling, I would always do a return on investment for a project. And these were multi-million dollar sales. No one ever went back after the fact and saw that the ROI assumptions were correct. I mean, you do the ROI to get the order in, but then nobody ever went back to say, well, did it prove it? And I think the same thing is true when you're dealing with end users. You've got to have some ability to make sure that this is going to be profitable with the company, but don't hold somebody's feet to the fire.
Yeah, to make it an argument is really what you're trying to avoid. The SLA contract becomes the foundation for arguing, if the ROI or TCO calculator becomes the foundation for arguing on what metric you're actually measuring and whether that actually means business value or not, as we've had some articles in the recently about that, right? What are the right KPIs to measure even are possibly different than what you think.
And I have a great example. I was once a director of operations for a company, and I ordered some pens that were going to have a bright red logo on it. And so they came in, and instead of being bright red, they were orange. And so I called my vendor and I said, these pens are not right. And you know what the first thing he said? You signed the contract. And I'm telling you, at that point, I'm thinking, I turned to him and I can't remember his name, but I said, Mike, the only thing I want to hear from you is, I'm sorry, shouldn't have happened, I'll fix it. And he came out and looked at the pen and he said, these are horrible. I said, I called you and told you that, okay? When your end user calls you up and is not happy, don't say, well, you signed the contract, you approved the project. No, these are your buddies and your colleagues. Do not get upset with that.
All right. So really, this article has a keyword of IT failure. IT failure will get you this article. Best practices, if you type that in, will actually get you 116 more positive facing articles, I'm assuming, across the IT functions. But it's good to like take a look at some of these best practices from both sides and understand what you're getting into. Which brings me, Warren, to my question of the week. I think we're going to follow up on this article. What, dear audience, is your recommendation or advice about an IT best or worst practice? I mean, I think we're looking for the practices that people generally consider to be best practice advice that maybe aren't so great, really, when you dive into them. Contact us on our podcast homepage. You can find a nice form there that'll come directly to the cast and crew on smallworldbigdata.com under the Tech Top 6 podcast. And we will definitely read that out on our show next week. Warren, let's do a kind of roundup coming up, I think. We're nearing the end of 2020. How about next week we talk a little bit about some of the top articles that you found on the IT Weekly newsletter?
Okay, I'll go back and take a look at our statistics and see what articles are being hit most often. I have a pretty good idea of where it's going to be, but we'll talk about some of those things along for next week and see if there's anything new and really exciting that comes up in the meantime also.
Right. Because normally here in the Tech Top 6, we're talking about things that we're hand curating and picking out the best of the best. And it might be just interesting to look at what your audience has voted on just by their interest and clicked on. By the way, how many articles and how many clicks are you getting?
We just passed 17,915 articles that we have out there. And someone can go to our website. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. And also the fact that our website, we don't use any cookies. So you can come visit our website and we're not tracking you. But use a keyword. You can put in 5G, GDPR, security, whatever you want, and narrow it down as much as you want. So we've got that. And just here recently, just to give you an idea, we must be doing something right because we just passed 10,000 connections on LinkedIn. So people are very, very happy with what we're doing. So we have a daily update that we post to LinkedIn, that we put out the articles there every single day. And like I said, Mike, it's free. Just go to www.itweeklynewsletter.com. There you go. And also you can go to our Tech Top 6 and take a look at that and hear you and I banter about these good articles every single week.
And if you want to hear more of the IT Weekly Newsletter Tech Top 6 podcast, be sure and subscribe if you haven't already, because it comes out every week. And we often are also putting out some bonus episodes of some interviews and things we're starting to do now. If you like what you're hearing, be sure and give us a good rating on your subscription index, because it'll help someone else find us and make us grow a little bit more in popularity here. You can find
also along those lines, Mike, if somebody needs a blog or a podcast done for them, you and I, along with our magnificent producer, Michelle, can put something together for a company that you can post on your website and use anyway. Michelle Redu is a terrific, terrific producer that keeps us on our toes and puts this thing together every single week. So it just sounds terrific.
We sound great, don't we, Warren?
I think we do.
Yeah, and that it's all because of her. I would definitely give her kudos for that. If you are interested in anything we've just talked about, answering our question of the week, subscribing, looking for all the URLs for all those great feeds like iHeartRadio and TuneIn and Apple iPod, you can find them on smallworldbigdata.com under the Tech Top 6 podcast page. And if you want to get in touch with us about any sort of content marketing needs that you might have going into 2021, whether it's bespoke episodes, some audio content, Warren and I showing up in person at your site to host your event. Now, Warren, I just made that up, but you know, you got enough money, we'll come. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly.
So give us a call again, smallworldbigdata.com. Warren, it's been a pleasure again. Looking forward to next week.
Mike, always a pleasure talking to you. And I really, really enjoy talking about these articles.
And audience, take care and listen in next week.
This has been a Small World Big Data Podcast.